Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Guys, continue to be resilient, come in the building, ready to work, ready to explore the next opportunity we have against a really good football team in Pittsburgh. Dynamic players, dynamic coach. Obviously, they have probably a few of the best players in the game. They're a good football team, so it's a tremendous challenge again for us. Knowing this division, that's kind of the way it is. It's a tough division, it's AFC North. No one's really just went out and claimed it. I think our players are excited about the opportunity of being at home and playing. It's good to have a healthy team. It's good this time of year, in the situation we are, to have everybody out there battling, getting ready and working to get better. I think what we need is a winning quarterback. Let me put it like that. I mean, obviously, Ben has a lot of great characteristics, and I'm not going to compare him to the guys that are on our roster, but do we want a guy that can win like him? Absolutely.
You know, I think that's an area in which we're improving. I think you always have to wait until it's all said and done to see where you are. But up until this point, obviously, the number one indicator was how many times we turned the ball over, how fewer times we turned the ball over toward the end of the year. So that's big. It's always obviously always something you stress. There's not a football coach in America that doesn't talk to the team about turnovers and then also try to work and practice it, et cetera. But I think our guys are doing a good job taking care of the ball right now. But that's a week-to-week thing. You know, that's a week-to-week battle. We're facing a team that certainly has a lot of really fine athletes out there running around, and they can make some things happen.
Yeah, they're a really talented team. Up and down their roster, there's Pro Bowlers, high draft picks, really talented players. I know, you know, from what I've seen on the defensive side of the ball, they fly around, they play fast and physical. Like you said, turnover margin in this league means a lot. It's the NFL. Every game is going to be a tough game, and these guys are no different. I mean, they're going to fight to the end just like we are, you know, and whoever plays better on Sunday is going to win the game.
He's doing good. Surgery was successful. We will know, is, you know, based on, you know, what the doctors say and what, how Will is feeling, what he's able to do during the week in terms of practice, et cetera. They both had extensive practice time through the course of the year, and yes, we are confident they'll do a good job. Well, really coaching a good football team, doing a very good job. The defense is aggressive, athletic, fast, create turnovers.
Playoff rankings, obviously people respect our work, and that's it. Move on and play the best we can. The game of the game is, I know their personnel. We recruited a lot of those guys. I think there's more coaches in the team in the country. The guys that play the games, and that's, you know, one of the things is they're young guys, maybe first time playing, but they know them. They know it's a rugged game.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are indeed Toledo's sports leader. My oh my, what a very busy program we have for you today. What a very busy montage there put together by Mr. Jim Cushlin. A lot of important stuff you heard from Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. We're going to talk NFL preview, see if the 0-10 Browns can continue their march toward imperfection at 0-16 when they take on the Steelers on Sunday. You heard a little bit of Jim Caldwell as well. The Lions, of course, are headed in the opposite direction, coming off of a win before their bye week over the Vikings. Now a very, very beatable Jacksonville team at home. Then the Vikings again back at home, so an opportunity here for Jim Caldwell and his Lions to really position themselves in the NFC North. You then heard a little bit from Matthew Stafford on the same. Jim Harbaugh and Urban Meyer very excited for obvious reasons, because Louisville last night really, really opened a lot of doors. Maybe for them, maybe not. And I'll explain what I mean by that as we continue. But for now, I would just like to officially welcome you to a Football Friday edition of the Extravaganza right here on the Ticket. We have a ton of football to talk about. I would normally, under the circumstances we have today, start by talking about the Louisville game last night. I told Paul Keels yesterday, Jim Cushlin, you know, guys, I said, what are your thoughts on this? You know, Louisville sitting there at number five right now. They are a one-loss team. Their only loss was to Clemson on the road in Death Valley in a very, very close game. They would have to benefit, right, from a Michigan or Ohio State loss, whichever one of them loses next Saturday will fall out of the top four, and Louisville would slide in, right? And Paul said, no, I don't really think so. I said, why not? And I said, have you seen how fast that team plays the game? They're going to be trouble for anybody. And he said, well, I haven't really watched them that much. Every time they're on, you know, the Buckeyes are on, and I've got work to do and blah, blah, blah. I said, DVR the game tonight, because he was calling Ohio State basketball. I said, DVR the game and then watch it, you know, on replay and enjoy the track meet. It's really, really fun to watch Lamar Jackson play. And all they do is go out there last night and fall behind 31-0. Did that really happen? A 36-10 final to Houston, a Cougars team that started the season, by the way, a house of fire, as they beat Oklahoma, highly ranked, third-ranked Oklahoma at the start of the season, but that had subsequently lost twice to unranked teams as Tom Herman's group kind of just fell out of the national picture. Well, they vaulted back into it, not into the national title picture, of course. Houston's not going to be a part of that conversation, but they sure as hell knocked the Louisville Cardinals out of it. Bobby Petrino, everybody's most hated guy, takes one on the chin. Lamar Jackson's Heisman hopes take it on the chin. Not that he's not still the favorite, but he's not a lock anymore, with a lot of guys having an opportunity to perhaps close that gap. What happened to Louisville? Something we're going to address this afternoon. But I can't start there as much as I would like to, because I have to start with this. I don't know about you, but as I started watching that Louisville-Houston game, and it kind of got kind of crazy with Houston taking it to him, just, you know, good old-fashioned butt-kicking, it made me flip on a game that I would ordinarily not have wanted to watch, and that is Thursday Night NFL. It's over the top. It's too much. It is completely, what's the word that we've been using, oversaturating, I think, America with NFL football games on Thursday nights, and it was going to be a clunker anyway. Turned out to be somewhat of a clunker. You know, Cam Newton and the Panthers win a very, very ugly game, but I did turn it on, you know, to watch it a little bit because of the Louisville game, the way it was going, and it made me, of course, able to see one of the most bizarre sights I think I've ever seen, and that is the hit that Luke Kuechly, the linebacker, former Defensive Player of the Year, took in this game that had him carted off the field on a cart, you know, a golf cart, with tears in his eyes. One of the toughest guys, I think, in the National Football League, one of the most respected guys in the National Football League, left in tears. And to this moment in time, despite all kinds of reports coming out of Carolina, I still don't know what happened. He's in the concussion protocol. He could have suffered a concussion, but he didn't take a direct blow to the head. If anything, the helmet of the running back he was filling, you know, stepping up to fill the meat in the hole, hit the front of his face mask near the bottom of it and may have jerked his head back a little bit. And then he kind of got hit in the back of the head by another tackler, but not a rim rattling or you know, head scrambling type of, you know, hit that we oftentimes see that causes concussion. And usually concussions are not accompanied by tears. They're accompanied by grogginess. They're accompanied by maybe lack of balance. They're accompanied by, you know, just what's the word I'm looking for? You know, the haze and the little fuzz and the little bit of kind of bell ringing and the, you know, not quite sure if I'm steady on my feet type of thing, but not usually tears. So to this moment, I'm wondering, and I can't stop. I can't just accept Ron Rivera, the coach, saying today he's in the concussion protocol and that's it. He's being evaluated for concussion, because I've seen concussions. We've all seen concussions. And I've never seen a concussion come on a hit that was so seemingly innocuous, seemingly a very, very benign type of hit. And I've never seen it lead to tears in the eyes of one of the toughest defensive players in the National Football League. It makes me ask the question, what in the hell really happened to Luke Kuechly last night? Kush, did you see it?
Yeah, I didn't see it live, but I've seen the shot of it since, and it was. It's kind of those, you want you we're not doctors here, but we try to wonder how do you get a concussion, you know, from that, or if there's anything else, for what anything else going on. Now, for what it's worth, this was about 2 hours ago. The Charlotte Observer is reporting that Kuechly is in the concussion protocol.
Yeah, Ron Rivera revealed that at a press conference earlier today.
Right, but
there's got to be more to it than that.
And that's what I keep, you know, thinking about after I've seen the hit and since then, and I'm not sure what to exactly think. I'm not even going to begin to speculate because I'll probably get bones in the wrong place if I start doing that.
Yeah, you know, and I don't like to play doctor on TV or radio either, but I just don't understand, like I said, exactly what caused him to break down the way that he did. You know, for me, guys like that don't cry because of pain. So it can't be because of pain. Guys like that, you know, if they get pain.
That struck me, too.
If anything, their teeth are gritted and they're, oh, and they're angry and, oh, my God, it hurts, that kind of thing. But it's not a tear-inducing thing. Kobe Bryant ruptured his Achilles tendon. And from what athletes tell you, that is one of the most, if not the most painful things you can do, that a ruptured Achilles, torn Achilles, it hurts worse than a torn ACL. It hurts worse than a bone break, than a high sprain, than pretty much anything. It's just like really, really, there's a nerve center down there in the Achilles. When that tears, it's just, just shooting pain. And guys just, and they grit their teeth, and they may pound the ground, but it's not like a tear-inducing thing like you would see in a kid. And look, I'm staring at the video right now in a freeze frame of the video of Luke Kuechly being carted off. Looking like, I don't know, but, and I say this without any disrespect at all intended, but his face looks like that of a little kid. He looks like a kid who just, he got hurt, got in trouble, has been grounded. And again, I am totally not saying this for effect. I'm totally not saying this to disrespect this wonderful defensive player who is so well-liked, if not beloved, by virtually everybody in the NFL. Luke Kuechly is just a great guy and a great story and a great player and a tough guy. So this is not intended to be funny when I say he looks like a little kid who got grounded. But I'm staring at his face, and maybe that's the concussion part. He doesn't have a clear look of understanding maybe where he is and what's going on. That might contribute to the blank look of sadness, where it's almost like, you know, if it wasn't a freeze frame right now, I would say, you know, you could almost see the chin quivering or the lip quivering, you know, and him trying to fight back tears. And he did have tears. And I just don't understand what happened to him. Now, I listened to some of the other shows today, of course, as I do every day. Like to get other people's takes on things, and I read blogs, and I read Twitter, and I read Facebook, and all this sort of thing. And everybody is wondering, and I'm going to go ahead and be maybe a little irresponsible in doing speculation, but you know, I'm acknowledging up front that I'm not a doctor, and I'm not certainly not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, in order to which disqualifies me from doing any analysis of this. But I'm going to speculate just. As I acknowledge up front that it means nothing. I feel as though what happened maybe to Luke Kuechly last night, what brought tears, was not pain, not the actual concussion itself, but fear. I feel like, as I watch it, that there's fear there. This is a guy who missed 3 games last year with a concussion. Now, we all know there have been players, not many, but players who have left the football world because of their fear of head injury and some things that have happened, of course, to other people. What's the kid's name, Jim, from San Francisco, who did this at the beginning of the year, who retired in the offseason?
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
He only
about.
Played 1 year.
Right.
He was a rookie. He was getting a little bit of time, getting an opportunity.
I can't remember the name. Let me look
linebacker.
It up.
Linebacker. It's okay. It's okay. It's not germane to the discussion. It's a player, and there have been a couple of others. But I feel like
Chris Borland.
Thank you. Chris Borland. That's exactly right. Thank you. But I feel like as I watch that, this is a guy that had the concussion last year and then felt maybe his neck get tweaked in a way that scared the living daylights out of him. and that might have been what caused the, I don't know, a moment of self-awareness, a moment of mortality, the understanding that, oh my God, that didn't feel right. Because he didn't take a blow to the top of the head or to the side of the head or something that would normally, when you see concussions happen, those kinds of hits. He didn't. He was delivering a hit. At the last second, the running back got lower than him and put the crown of his helmet kind of in the very bottom part of Luke Kuechly's face mask. And it kind of, you know, made his head go back a little, I guess, but not unlike any other tackle. That's what makes this so bizarre. And then I guess at the end of the play, or I mean just like literally a second later as he was going backwards, somebody else from behind came up to try to help make the stop, one of his own teammates, and kind of hit him in the back of the head with his helmet. But at the end of it here, it wasn't one of those hits that said, wow, that's going to ring his bell. He's going to be in the concussion protocol. So I'm guessing that this just tweaked him the wrong way. Maybe his neck kind of felt a twinge, and maybe he had a flash before his eyes. Going back to his last season, you know, three games missed because of a concussion, and maybe he just got scared. And maybe that's what really, really made him kind of overwhelmed with emotion at that moment in time. By the way, he took to Instagram earlier today to make sure to let people know that he is okay. As a matter of fact, one of his teammates actually did it for him. He's on Instagram, and he's giving the thumbs up. Both of them are. And so he wants people to know that he's got thumbs up and everything's okay now. But it's freaking a lot of people out, and I would be lying if I said it wasn't me. Thomas Davis, by the way, posted the picture. That's his teammate on Instagram, posted the picture of the two of them, including Kuechly, smiling and flashing the thumbs up. And the comment was, Luke wanted me to let you guys know that he's doing fine, and thanks for your prayers. So he's okay, but it's one of those things that we have to talk about in the context of player safety in 2016 NFL football. All right, going to get an early timeout here on the extravaganza because we got to make room for our friend Scott Petrak. We're going to get an NFL preview. We'll ask him to analyze this too. We're going to talk to Scott Petrak about the NFL just to let you know what's coming up. Petrak now, Bill Clark coming up at 4:45 on this Football Friday, talking high school matchups, or excuse me, 3:45, beg pardon. Justin Rogers at 4:05 on the Lions and more NFL. And then Mel Kiper Jr. in the 4 o'clock hour as well from ESPN talking with us about the NFL playoffs and more right here on the
A France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward we roll on this Friday afternoon, Football Friday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Thanks so much for being a part of the program this afternoon. Told you we had football wall to wall pretty much today. We're going to start with the NFL. We've got high school football matchups, playoff football to talk to Bill Clark about coming up at 3:45. Justin Rogers from the Lions side of things up in Michigan as the Lions host Jacksonville on Sunday at 4:05. Then Mel Kiper Jr. at 4:35. But none of them are as close to the program as this guy is. He's with us almost every single week without fail. And I'm talking, of course, about NFL beat writer out in Cleveland, our friend Scott Petrak, joining us now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Scotty, how are you?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for spending some time. We appreciate it. Hey, before we preview the weekend in the National Football League and talk about the twice annual, almost guaranteed beatdown that the Steelers give the Browns and Ben Roethlisberger, who is 19-2, I think, in his career against Cleveland. Let's look back to last night, not for the result of the game. It's largely irrelevant. Neither of those teams is going anywhere, New Orleans or Carolina, obviously. But what the hell happened to Luke Kuechly? Scotty, I watched it, and I watched it over and over again. He did not take one of those, you know, James Harrison to Colt McCoy head-to-head shots or anything of the sort. It looked like such a benign hit in the collision that he had with the running back, and yet the guy left the field on a cart in tears. It's unlike anything I think I've ever seen. Scotty, what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Bob. You know, when I saw him on the cart crying, to me, I assumed he had blown out an Achilles tendon because the guys know that right away. You're able to stand, not to go. He knows his season's over. And then for them to say that he was being evaluated for concussion, it stunned me. And you're right, the hit wasn't one of those wow hits. But he's had a little bit of a concussion history. And you know how it is. It doesn't need to stand out. The hit doesn't need to be so obvious. If you get hit the right way, the right thing happens, But that's just scary. And I don't think the tears were because he thought he had a concussion. I think the tears were kind of a symptom of the concussion.
Explain that further, because I'm trying to figure that out too. We've seen guys with concussions. We've seen them, you know, look woozy, unstable, unable to maybe walk in a straight line. We've seen guys holding their heads with headaches. We've seen concussion symptoms in a lot of guys. I don't recall anybody actually being in tears. And this isn't some little, you know, weak-willed guy. Luke Kuechly is one of the toughest guys in the National Football League, one of the hardest hitters, one of the best players, former Defensive Player of the Year. So that, you know, I certainly would never imply that he's crying because it hurts too much or he's weak in any way. But I've just never seen anybody because of concussion, end up being, you know, leaving the field in tears.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I haven't seen that either. But I think we fall into a trap with concussions that, hey, we've seen this before, or this is a normal thing that happens. And I think the fact is concussions change on a case-by-case basis. And for Luke Kuechly, I just think that was his reaction, his physical reaction, to his brain being jostled around. And it came out through tears, which is unusual and I'd never seen before. But I just think that's what it is. I think each case is separate. And just because we haven't seen it doesn't mean that's not what it was. And it's just an interesting contrast because I think Mark Ingram had run off the field after he had gotten a concussion about 5 minutes early. So every case is different.
Yeah, they really are. That's a very good point. And, you know, not being a doctor or anything else, I have no way of knowing how that can impact an individual. And you make as good an argument as anything that I've heard thus far. In trying to psychoanalyze, though, again, which I'm not qualified to do, so I want to make sure that's very clear and everybody knows that. But the one thing I could think of, because it didn't look like a concussion-inducing hit. You know, the helmet of the running back, whose name escapes me at the moment, hit kind of the bottom of Kuechly's face mask, the very bottom of it, and maybe it jerks his head down a little bit. And then he got hit in the back of the head, but again, not in a bone-rattling way, by his own teammate who was also coming up to Phil to help on the tackle. And I'm just wondering if his neck got tweaked in such a way that it scared him. Because he had the three games last year that he missed, Scott, you know, and then maybe just he got some strange twinge in his neck that scared him, and he had a really overly emotional reaction to that, like, oh, my God, I almost broke my neck. I'm totally guessing, obviously.
Yeah, you know, that seems logical to me, Bob. I wouldn't rule that out. I would also think that, you know, and this is, again, just me kind of hypothesizing, is maybe he took a big hit a play or two earlier, nobody noticed, and then you take a little hit a couple plays later, and it all kind of adds up, and that's when the emotions or the reaction happens to the concussion.
That's entirely possible. That's a very interesting theory, too. By the way, did you see the Instagram earlier today, Scotty, just an update on that?
No.
I just saw it literally as we came on the air, so I just figured I'd make you aware of it. His teammate posted an Instagram of the two of them, and was it Thomas Davis? I had it up before, now I can't seem to find it.
Yeah, it was Thomas Davis.
Thomas Davis, yeah, here it is. Thomas Davis taking a selfie with Kuechly in the background, right behind him over his shoulder, and Luke with a big thumbs up and a big smile on his face, and it says, Luke wanted me to let you guys know that he's doing fine, and thanks for your prayers. Hashtag keep pounding. So that's the really good news update in terms of at least how he's feeling. But it was just such a bizarre sight to see such a stud, you know, tough guy leaving the field in tears like that. And it just kind of made you wonder, my God, what made that happen? So and everybody in the NFL is talking about it right now. So I just wanted to get some perspective on that. But that's certainly good news from the Instagram side. All right. Now let's get into football that we care about. Obviously, we cover two teams here in Toledo. Scotty, we talk to you about Cleveland every week. We're going to talk to our friend Justin about the Lions. Are the Browns as bad as 0-16 indicates a team would be, or are they worse? Those are your only two choices.
I don't think they're
better than 0-16. And when I say 0-16, excuse me, 0-10, and potentially, I don't think they're better than 0-10. I think they are exactly what 0-10 thinks it looks like, or suggests a team should look like, or maybe a little bit worse.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Bob. The only caveat I would say is, you know, if Cody Parkey makes a field goal in Miami, they have a win, and we're not talking about winless season in 0-16. But besides that, they're just not any better than the record.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, too. But, of course, that's what winless teams do. They miss game-winning field goals, or they blow a coverage that would seal a game, or whatever the case might be, or they drop what could have been a touchdown catch on a drive with 3 minutes to go that could have put them ahead to take a lead and win the thing. I mean, that's just what teams do when they are this bad. Now, the Steelers come in a very unusual place. The Steelers come in having lost four in a row. They just don't do that in Pittsburgh. They haven't done that in Pittsburgh. Unless, a whole bunch of guys are not healthy. Now, we know Roethlisberger was gone for a few games and did not have his legs literally back under him for his first return game. But he played very well in the loss to Dallas, and it still came up to a loss against Dallas. And for the first time in the Mike Tomlin era that I know, I mean, we don't live in Pittsburgh, so we don't cover their we're not privy to their media coverage there to see what fans are saying, but there are some barks and some howls for hey, does Mike Tomlin really, really know what it takes to get this team to where it needs to be? So it's a very unique thing. The Browns have the longest losing streak in the league. The Steelers have the longest losing streak they've had in a long time on Sunday.
No, you're right. And I think with Tomlin, you've seen kind of some of the cracks coming even from Big Ben. He's questioned how hard they practice. The physicality of the practice. Mm-hmm. After the game, he talked about discipline and fundamentals. So, I think when your quarterback and your leader is publicly at least questioning or doubting your coach, that's not a great sign. However, I still think they have enough talent to make a run. Obviously I expected to have to start Sunday in Cleveland. But they are at a weird place for them, especially in a year where the AFC North is theirs for the taking and they've just been unable go out and grab it.
Yeah, that's very true. The North is a wreck. The Ravens are in first place by a game, and they're not good at all. The Bengals are way, way underachieving, which is what they kind of do under Marvin Lewis, even though sometimes they'll have really good regular seasons, then they underachieve in the playoffs, and it's there. And when healthy, we kind of get into this nickname a lot, but the big three or Dallas, they used to have, the Aikman, Emmett, Michael Irvin type thing. And, the big three of Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown might be better than any other threesome in those particular positions in the league. And yet they're not getting it done efficiently on offense, and their defense just can't stop anybody. So let's look at it from that standpoint. A, can the Browns take advantage of this this little funk that they're in offensively? The Steelers are in offensively and get a few stops. And B, this is the other part. Can Cody Kessler, who was yanked the last time he started a game, do anything against what has become a porous Pittsburgh Steelers defense?
Well, I think the answer to question A is no. The Browns have not proved that they can stop anybody. Even against the pedestrian Baltimore offense, they kept the 7 points at halftime. Then they come out after halftime and give up three touchdowns. And we saw the same thing against the Jets. Yeah. So until the Browns defense shows that it can stop anybody for any extended period, I don't think they can. I'm not going to predict that they can, and especially against an offense as high-powered as Pittsburgh's potentially can be. So I think Pittsburgh's going to score a bunch of points. I also think the Browns had the potential to score points in this game because Pittsburgh's defense isn't what it used to be. They're missing Cam Hayward's done for the year with a torn pec, which affects their run defense, and they expect the Browns to go back to the run more. However, we're going to have some funky weather on Sunday. It's going to be cold. There might be snow. The wind chill is going to be bad. It's going to be very windy, and I'm not confident that Cody Kessler can do what he needs to do, throwing the ball in tough conditions.
That's a good point, too. We're talking to Scott Petrak, who covers the Cleveland Browns, obviously out in Cleveland. He's a beat writer. Bob France with you. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Cush, go ahead, man.
And I want to throw something out, I guess, at both of you guys. It's one of those symbolism kind of things because, a lot of obviously our talk for this Browns season is all the 0-16 possibility. And, Bob, I didn't catch this last Thursday, and I'm willing to bet you didn't either. But over the weekend, I was talking to my dad. And he pointed out that Al Michaels pointed out in the broadcast, and now that they lost that game last Thursday, of course, that since entering the NFL, so in other words, chopping off the four AAFC years, the Browns' all-time record is now 500. 461, 461, and 13 ties.
Yeah.
And they never have been a 500 or worse team for their franchise's history. It's just one of those, to me, it's one of those symbolizing numbers of where this franchise has been since 1999.
Yeah, you know, I did actually hear that, not during the broadcast, but it was brought up actually. I think it was might have been on Mike and Mike where they talked about where the Browns are now, being all time. And you know, Scotty, it is kind of deflating if you're a Browns fan, isn't it, to think about it from those standpoint of all of those championships, you know, the NFL championships, the old AFC championships, and this is how bad it's gotten recently that the all time historical record has fallen, you know, to mediocrity.
Yeah, it is, and you know. We could, in the job that I have, I could quote bad number after bad number every week, and I just think my readers are sick of seeing those, but that's one of those that you can't ignore. You know, the fact that they've dropped to 500, you know, the quote unquote once proud franchise, I think that is a very symbolic number. You know, and then one of my colleagues was saying that, you know, they're 0-10 this year. When they started up as a franchise, it took them like 87 games before they lost 10. And this year they've lost 10 in 10 tries.
Wow. That is freaky when you put it in those terms. Really, really, really difficult. Hey, I got to ask you about Robert Griffin, because we all know he made the news a little bit last week, you know, something about warming up an hour before kickoff. And when you're on IR, you can't do that. So, and all these nonsense. But the point is, he's getting closer to returning to health. Does returning to health mean that he returns to the playing field? Do the Browns still want to see anything out of this guy?
I think they do. He's going to practice next week. He has not been cleared for contact. He is still one more medical hurdle, where they have to say, okay, you're ready to play. You can, you know, get tackled and sacked and everything that comes with playing quarterback in this league. So I think once he gets that clearance, assuming he does, I really expect Hugh Jackson to go back to him. I don't know if he does it right away or he sticks with Cody Kessler for a couple more games, but I fully expect RG3 to start the last 2, 3, 4 games. Because, you know, Hugh wanted to see what he could do to start the year. I think he's seen enough of Cody Kessler to kind of form an opinion on what his, you know, potential is and his future is. So I think he wants to see what they can do with RG3. Plus, they are chasing a win, and Hugh is desperate to get a win. And I think he thinks RG3 gives him a better shot.
Well, Hugh is desperate to get a win, but apparently Sashi Brown not as much. And this is one of those strange things. Sashi Brown, who's running this team, was quoted this week as saying, we're not concerned about wins. Or I'm sorry, not concerned, focused, beg pardon. We are not focused on wins and losses this year. That can't be something any fan wants to hear, and it certainly isn't something anybody wearing a helmet wants to hear every, you know, when they're going out there and banging heads every week.
No, it certainly sounds like mixed messages. When you hear Hugh Jackson from the day he arrived talk about not rebuilding, and we're trying to win every week, and we're chasing greatness, and the effort that these players put into it on a daily and weekly basis, it seems contradictory. However, I understand where Sasha's coming from. I think he probably overstated his point, that there's a bigger picture, that this is a long-term rebuilding process. But I'm with you. It doesn't look good when the guy in charge says we don't care, and that's all the fans do care about.
Last thing, Scotty, we'll let you run, and we appreciate the time because we got some high school football to talk about. Speaking of Sashi Brown and the process that the Browns have undertaken, and, of course, the reliance upon analytics and metrics and so on and so forth with the likes of Paul D. Podesta, I wanted to get your reaction to this statement made by Patriots coach Bill Belichick when it comes to the issue of metrics.
Advanced websites and metric them wherever you want, I don't know. I have no idea. I've never looked at one. I wouldn't even care to look at one. I don't even care what they say. As far as the quarterback goes, read the coverage, throw the ball to the open receiver, take the best matchup. I mean, that's what it is in a nutshell. So
there's Bill Belichick Bill Belichick as he can be, as Belichickian as he can be. You know, I don't care about all this sabermetric stuff and advanced analytics. You know what? For me, it's get a quarterback, tell him to look, read the coverage, throw the ball to the open guy. It's as simple as that. This guy knows how to win. That's just him, but what does it say about, you know, nobody knows better how to win in this league than Bill Belichick, and that is the exact opposite of the approach than the one the Browns are undertaking.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Bob, but I think that's Bill playing possum, because guys who know Bill know that he does care about those things. He's got, we all know who Ernie Adams is. He's kind of the guy behind the scenes, and he's been crunching those secret numbers, which is just analytics in a primitive form, for decades. So when Bill says it, he thinks it sounds good, and he thinks maybe, I don't know if he cares if it's a good soundbite, but I think he likes the message that it puts out there. But I don't believe for a second that he's not involved in every up-to-the-minute stat advantage that he thinks he can get.
Okay. So you're saying he's just playing possum. And that's interesting. And by the way, he's right. It does sound good. It makes it sound like, you know what, all these you know, nerds sitting around their computers with their lab coats on trying to figure out how this football game works. And you don't need it. Just tell you, get yourself a good quarterback. Tell him to read the defense and get the ball to the open guy. It's just as simple as all that. Scotty, prediction on score on Sunday?
I think I went with 37-23 Pittsburgh.
All right, reasonable, because the Browns defense really can't stop anybody, but then again, neither can the Steelers these days, so maybe Cody can put up 20-plus points in this one. Scotty, thanks for your analysis, as always. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Bobby.
All right, you got it. Let's get out for a quick time out here so we can talk high school football.
The Ticket.
Rolling onward on a Football Friday edition right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, hope you're having a great day. Hope you had a great work week, and hopefully you have a better weekend in store. And it's going to be great if you started out with high school football, which is where we go next with our good friend Bill Clark, who is the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
I am fantastic, my friend. We got some games that we want to talk to you about and get a little preview of, including, of course, the feature game tomorrow night, 6:30 pregame, right here on 106.5, 7 o'clock kickoff on 106.5, The Ticket, and that would be Toledo's Central Catholic Fighting Irish taking on Lexington, the sixth seed in Division III, Region 10. But in the interest of chronology, let's start with tonight's matchup. Let's talk about Anthony Wayne, 9-3. That's a 4-6 matchup now in District 2, Region 6, taking on Olmsted Falls, another 9-3 club. This one at Sandusky Perkins. Anthony Wayne used some stout defense to beat Avon Lake last week, 14-6. What do you see?
Well, I'll tell you, after last week, you got to believe that the Anthony Wayne defense is fired up to take on anybody. I believe they had 3 goal line stands or in the red zone stands last week. They won by 8 points and didn't need to score any more. I mean, they scored just enough, and they kept a good Avon Lake team off the board. And then this week it's going to be the same thing. People say, you know, they ask me about Central Catholic, and they go, is the team Central's playing, are they any good? And I'm saying, this is the regional final. Everybody's good. So it's just a matter of how good they are and who gets to put their will on the other team. And I think right now Andy Brumgard and Anthony Wayne, they are playing so well. These kids just believe so much in each other. And they're playing as a unit. It's not, they're not worried about who gets the stats. They're not worried about who, how many tackles somebody gets. They're just worried about the number on the scoreboard when the game is over. And Andy Brungard gets a lot of credit for that. And he came over from Perrysburg as the defensive coordinator last year, and he basically turned that program around. I mean, he was the district, two coach of the year, and rightly so. I mean, he just turned that program around, and every game they win adds another milestone to that record because they've never been this far into the playoffs. So hopefully they've got tonight and then two more, and it'd be great to see them get to the Columbus for the finals. That would be amazing. But, yeah, tonight I think they'll have their hands full. Olmsted Falls is usually a pretty good team. They come in with some decent skill position players, but I'll tell you right now, I'm not a betting man, but if I had to put money down on this game, I sure wouldn't bet against Anthony Wayne because I think they're playing really good football right now, especially defensively. And I think in the playoffs, defense is key.
That's what's going to make this a really great game because the Olmsted Falls teams, they run the heck out of the football. They just have some beast running backs, particularly one feature back that can pound it and pound it. So it'll be strength against strength tonight at Sandusky Perkins for Anthony Wayne and Olmsted Falls. Let's just quickly get to another game that's going on tonight. That's the Division 6 Region 22 matchup between Patrick Henry, number one seeded, 12-0 against number 3 Ayersville, another 12-0 team. That one will be at Napoleon.
Yeah, very comfortable for both of these teams playing in Napoleon. Both schools should have a huge following tonight. The crowd is going to be great. And, well, you can't ask for a better night of weather for the end of November. This is just amazing. So that place is going to be rocking. Napoleon is a great place to play. Patrick Henry's already been there earlier this year, I believe, on one of their earlier playoff games. I think. I won't swear to that. But the point is, neither team's going to have to travel too far. So their fans will be able to get there, which is just exactly the way the state likes to set it up, that both teams will have a good fan contingent there. But I just think right now the Patriots are kicking on all cylinders, and I think it would be a huge upset if Ayersville wins that game. So I would lean toward the Patriots moving to the Final Four in that division.
By the way, you said a mouthful when you talk about the weather for the end of November or mid to late November anyway here on the 18th. But seriously, 70-plus degrees for crying out loud. It won't be that at kickoff for these games, but it's going to be nice. Now, tomorrow, maybe a little bit cooler, and maybe next week for the semifinal rounds, a little bit more so. But my goodness, God just wants to watch some football in comfort and peace tonight.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. And I'm sorry that Central's playing tomorrow night and not tonight, because tomorrow I think it's supposed to be a high of 45, maybe a few snow flurries. So, yeah, you'd love to be playing tonight versus tomorrow night. But really, as you mentioned, Bob, this is the end of November. So people shouldn't really complain if it gets to be 45 tomorrow night, because we've had a talk about an amazing fall.
Well,
this has been wonderful.
But you have a right to complain about which night you're playing on. I mean, this is Northern Ohio for you. This, you know what I mean? 70 plus today and a high of 47 tomorrow. Sunshine today, snowflakes. That's just the problem of living in Ohio or even in Southeast Michigan. Speaking of which, Bill, real quick on the Michigan State semifinal matchup in Division 8 up north of the state line. Ottawa Lake Whiteford, 12-0. Saginaw's Michigan Lutheran Seminary, 10-2. Game at Dearborn tomorrow. Just a quick thought on that one.
Well, I think if Whiteford's Bobcats can get these guys out of their cassocks and get them tripping all over themselves, I think they have a pretty good shot. But, no, seriously, we had Jason Mensing, their head coach, on our football forum earlier this week, and he's got these kids fired up. He's basically said from about week 8 that every game is a playoff game, and they're just taking it one game at a time. This is the second straight year they've made it to the state semifinals, so – you know, God willing, they would get to take one more step this year and get to that championship game in Ford Field a week from now. But, yeah, I'll go with Whiteford. I'm not going to go against the local team. I don't know about much about the Michigan Lutheran Seminary. They may have a straight line to God, but I'm sure there's some good kids on the Whiteford team, too. So I think God will try to be neutral in that game, but I'll take the Bobcats.
Well done. And our feature game, of course, is the one tomorrow night we'll have again. Kickoff at 7, pregame at 6:30, and that is the undefeated Fighting Irish against number 6 Lexington, 9-3. That one's at Tiffin Columbian Stadium. The Irish clicking on all cylinders last week. Another monster game for Michael Warren, but not just Michael Warren, but a 56-13 win. They look ready, and they look ready for another run to the state semifinals.
Yeah, the defense has just been incredible. It was funny. I'm not sure I mentioned this to you last week, Bob, but talking to Greg Dempsey, you know, he's won 3 state titles in 2005, 12, and 14, and he told me that this front seven of this year's team is the best front seven he's had in his 17 years at Central Catholic, and they're playing that way right now. They take a lot of pride in keeping that other team off the scoreboard. Everybody was talking about Cunningham last week, the very good quarterback for university school, and they bottled him up. I mean, he did not see a rush like he saw last week, and hopefully it could be that same way. Logan Pitzenmeyer, who is the quarterback and also an outstanding linebacker for the Minutemen, he's a dual threat. He likes to run the football, not a great passer, and so both teams are going to rely heavily on the running game. But if whatever team can get the passing game going just to open up the box a little bit, I think that's the team that's going to be successful. And Torin Campbell has really come on, the quarterback for the Irish, the last couple of weeks. He threw 2 bombs last week, picked up 2 touchdown passes. And again, if the Irish can get on the board, their defense has only given up about 13 points per ball game while the offense is scoring 42. But again, the Minutemen can put points on the board. It's just going to be a big challenge for the Fighting Irish defense to stop Pitzenmeyer. I mean, he can run the ball. He hands it off to his tailback Hunter Biddle, and then he'll also run it off, or once in a while he'll try to get it to a wide receiver on the jet sweep. So the Irish defense, Ryan Brown is the defensive coordinator for the Irish. He'll have them ready to play, because the Irish like getting this far. This is their 5th straight regional championship, and they've won 3 out of the last 4. So this is not going to be new territory for them, and I think that may help, because this is the first time Lexington has ever been this far in the tournament. This is only their 4th appearance in the state playoffs at all, and they've never been this far. So confidence and experience certainly on the Irish side, and I really think the talent is on the Irish side. If they play like they have been playing, I think the Irish will be in the Final Four next week.
You know what, I'll tell you what, I think that experience factor is huge and bigger than many people realize. Of course, there's the talent factor, and really nobody has more of that than Central Catholic either, but even if you did come up against somebody with maybe a, you know, just as stocked of a talent base, that experience and playing in big games and knowing that it's not over, even if you get down, and knowing how to handle the swings of games at this stage and at this level, certainly would play in the Fighting Irish's favor. So that game tomorrow night, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kickoff. You'll hear it right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Bill Clark, will have the call. Bill, enjoy your time out in Tiffin. Say hi to my old friends out there at Heidelberg. And I look forward to chatting with you again, as we get ready for maybe a couple of state semifinal games with the locals.
Well, we already talked about God, but from your mouth to God's ears, Bob, let's hope that's the case.
You got it,
we'll
my friend.
To,
thank you, Bill.
We'll talk to you next Friday. Thank
All
you.
All right, buddy. There's Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and in Southeast Michigan. Really great breakdown, as always. All right, going to take a timeout. Top of the hour Sports Center coming as we continue on a Football Friday edition of the Extravaganza. Coming up, we are going to talk Lions football. Justin Rogers will join us coming up here in just a few minutes about the Lions matchup against Jacksonville and maybe looking ahead to what it's going to take in the second half of the season to secure a playoff berth. And then more NFL talk with Mel Kiper Jr. in the next hour as well, right here on ESPN 106.5. Oh, by the way, before I say ESPN 106.5, the ticket once again, I do want to say congratulations to McCand of Temperance, who is the winner of the ESPN 106.5, the ticket college football giveaway. Special thanks to Yingling Lager, Country Hearth Fireplace and Stoves, Yark Chrysler, Jeep Dodge Ram, and Total Image Limousine. Congratulations to the winner. Now we'll be back right after this on ESPN 106.5, the ticket.
He's doing good. Surgery was successful. We will know, is, you know, based on what the doctors say and what, how well he's feeling, what he's able to do during the week in terms of practice, et cetera. They both had extensive practice time through the course of the year, and yes, we're confident that we'll do a good job. Well, really coaching a good football team, doing a very good job. The defense is aggressive, athletic, fast, create turnovers.
Playoff rankings, I'd like to see people respect our work, and that's it. Move on and play the best we can. Extremely dangerous. I know their personnel. We recruited a lot of those guys. I think there's more coaches in the team in the country. The guys that play in games, that's, you know, one of the things is they're young guys, maybe the first time playing, but they know that. They know it's a rugged game.
You know, I think that's an area in which we're improving. I think you always have to wait until it's all said and done to see where you are. But up until this point, obviously, the number one indicator was how many times we turned the ball over, how fewer times we turned the ball over toward the end of the year. So that's big. It's always obviously always something you stress. There's not a football coach in America that doesn't talk to the team about turnovers and then also try to work and practice it, et cetera. But I think our guys are doing a good job taking care of the ball right now. But that's a week-to-week thing. You know, that's a week-to-week battle. We're facing a team that certainly has a lot of really fine athletes out there running around, and they can make some things happen.
Yeah, they're a really talented team. Up and down their roster, there's Pro Bowlers, high draft picks, really talented players. I know, you know, from what I've seen on the defensive side of the ball, they fly around, they play fast and physical. Like you said, turnover margin in this league means a lot. It's the NFL. Every game is going to be a tough game, and these guys are no different. I mean, they're going to fight to the end just like we are. You know, and whoever plays better on Sunday is going to win the game.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Not one of the deeper thoughts you're probably ever going to get. Whoever plays better is going to win the game, but we'll take it as we continue in hour number two right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You know what? Actually, maybe there is more depth to that than you think, because there have been games where teams have played better and not come out on the right side, so, or on the winning side, so... maybe you take that and run with it a little bit more than you originally think. Good stuff there in the montage. We heard from Jim Harbaugh. They take on Indiana, of course, tomorrow. Urban Meyer and the Buckeyes taking on Michigan State. Huge, huge matchup there. Obviously, a little revenge on the mind for Ohio State, as Mark D'Antonio has had their number a little bit over the last couple of years. But we want to focus on the NFL once again on this Football Friday edition of the Extravaganza, turning our attention north of the state line. Up into Detroit, and the Lions taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. You heard from Coach Caldwell. You heard from Matthew Stafford. 5-4 Lions moving on into the second half of the season, if you do indeed call their bye week in week number 10, the end of the first half. And they've got a couple of pretty winnable games in the offing. Jacksonville, Minnesota, New Orleans, and here to break that down, and then Chicago. Here to break that down for us, Justin Rogers from the Detroit News joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Justin, how are you?
Yeah, I just know whoever's going to score more points in those games is going to win them.
That's a pretty good one, too. Yeah, that's you kind of expect that would be the case in most circumstances anyway. You know, by the way, speaking of humor, I loved one of the I was actually reading your column, 10 critical stats that the Lions need to fix pronto online at the Detroit News website, and I clicked over to your the replay of your Lions chat, and I loved the comment from one of your readers. If Calvin Johnson wins Dancing with the Stars, will Martha hang a banner in Ford Field? And your response,
yeah, those your playoff banners, I'll tell you.
Your response was better than the question, probably.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the playoff banners. I think I've made that pretty clear in the past. I mean, that's the participation trophy in the NFL, and I guess it's all the Lions have to hang their hats on, but worthy of a banner? I don't think so.
No, I'm with you. I don't like that stuff either. You know, I mean, world championships, absolutely. It's that same thing in high school. State championship, great, but don't put regional semifinalist. That just means you lost in the semis, okay? You didn't even make it to the finals. Don't tell me that you made the playoffs. Tell me that you won something. Even if you're a conference champion, I'll take that. You know, a league in baseball, a league championship banner, I'll take that. That's okay. But anything less than that, I'm with you.
Do division titles count?
Division titles, I don't know. Where do you stand on that one, Justin?
I mean, in the Lions' case, I mean, I guess. But, I mean, there's four teams in your division, which makes it all the more implausible that they haven't won one in 23 years. But I don't know. It just, again, that seems pretty low bar.
I guess it does. You're right. And maybe it depends on the sport, and maybe it depends on your franchise. You know, if you're the Yankees and you have 27 world championships, you kind of don't need to be putting division titles up there. But if you've won one world championship in your existence, or in football in the Lions case, none, or in Super Bowl, that is, then you know, maybe you do lower the bar and you say, hey, look at this. We won a division, and maybe we even won the conference and, you know, made it to the Super Bowl. Maybe that's something worth celebrating. But but it really,
maybe you just don't need banners unless you got, stock in a banner company. Just skip the banners.
Well said. All right, well said. All right, let's talk about before we get into the specifics of Jacksonville, and I kind of ran down the second half schedule, or the remaining seven games of the schedule. I think it looks very good. It really does, if the Lions can find some consistency in a few key areas. But just your overall state of the team coming off of the bye, 5-4. If somebody would have said prior to the start of the season, Justin Rogers, would the Lions take that? Would you have accepted that as being the progress you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're pretty, it's a pretty reflective record of the team that they are. You know, I still believe that they're a 500 team in most ways. The fact that they've trailed in all nine games in the fourth quarter says that maybe they're even a little worse than a 500 team. But they've got a quarterback that plays well under pressure, that gets it done in crunch time, and that's led to five wins. And same thing I said at the start of the season, I'll say now, everything's laid out in front of them with the schedule to get the job done. It really should be playoffs or bust for this franchise. There's not a lot of excuses that they won't get it done, especially with the health of the team now versus maybe earlier in the season.
Is it fair to go even further than that? I mean, just looking at the standings and looking at the state of the Green Bay Packers, which is a wreck. The Vikings have just kind of fallen apart after that great start. They've lost four in a row. It's more than just playoffs or bust. I mean, doesn't it have to be with seven games remaining and you have a one-game lead? Well, you're tied with the Vikings. Take that back. But you have them again in 2 weeks. It ought to be division title or bust, shouldn't it?
Well, I think that's pretty much the only way they're getting into the playoffs. Somebody asked me last week, what's the situation where they get in as a second-place team in the NFC North? And there aren't many scenarios where that's going to happen unless, Green Bay or Minnesota go on some kind of crazy run-the-table run, which, like you said, looks really unlikely at this point. What it turns into is not playoffs or bust. Once they win that division title, if they win that division title, you really, with a home game in the playoffs, you expect a victory. You know, that's the time where you get your wins. It's very difficult to win on the road in this league. It's even more difficult to win on the road in this league in the playoffs. So, whoever you get at home, Washington, Eagles, whatever team it ends up being, you should win that game. And given this team's history, there's a banner for you, second playoff win in 60 years.
Second banner in 16. Justin Rogers joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, in the glass half full or half empty department, you said, all right, nine games. They've trailed in the fourth quarter in all nine games. So maybe they're worse than a 500 team, but they've won more than half of those games. They're plus 500 in that. So what is it, half full or half empty in that regard, that they're able to overcome those things more often than not?
Oh, I mean, you look at it statistically, you look at it on film, and you see a lot of traits that fall into both, camps there. Offensively, I think they're an efficient offense. They get a lot of things done. They don't turn the ball over. They have long, sustained drives. Stafford obviously is superb. They've got a lot of weapons, and they're healthy now. Defensively, they're kind of a train wreck right now. I think you could make a really strong argument that they're the worst defense in the NFL in terms of efficiency. They're the average drive for an opponent right now is 40 yards. So every time the Lions, give the ball to the opponent, they drive on average 40 yards. That's it's just ridiculous. They're not good in the red zone. They're not good on third down. So, you know, Stafford and company have kept this team afloat. Now, Ansa's healthy now, not as healthy now. Slay is back this week. You know, Levy probably doesn't play this week, but he's getting close. I think Josh Bynes has been an upgrade over Calvin Oy, and they've shown some, I guess, small signs of trending in the right direction defensively these last couple weeks. So, you know, if I have to pick one, I'm probably gonna go glass half full, but it's not by a wide margin.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Justin Rogers joining us, talking Lions football and NFL this weekend. Jim Cushlin is alongside as well. Cush, go ahead, bud.
And you were just mentioning, Justin, some of those guys coming back. Let's elaborate on that one, because the big news, or one of the biggest pieces of news, and you just mentioned him at the end, DeAndre Levy, finally cleared to return to practice. As you mentioned, he's not going to end up playing this week, but assuming there's no funky reoccurrence or something, he should finally be getting back into the lineup. What is reasonably expected from a Lions fans' perspective on Levy when he returns the field? Because for what it's worth, this is a guy who played a little bit in the first week of this season before going out with the injuries kept him out. And since he signed his extension last August, he's really combined last year and this year only played a handful of games. Now that he's getting back into the fold, what's a reasonable expectation that Lions fans should think of when they think of DeAndre Levy?
It's a great question. I mean, we really haven't seen him for almost two seasons. You know, we saw him in that opener, and he didn't look quite like the DeAndre Levy of old. He made one play where he chased down the back on a pass out into the flat, and you saw that flash, and you go, oh, there he is. There's that guy that you saw, you know, destroying opponents in 2013 and 2014. But overall, that performance was very inconsistent, very up and down. He was knocking off rust then. He's going to be knocking off the rust now. I think if you can get a player that's about 80% of what he was at his peak for the rest of the season, that's a pretty good upgrade to what they have now. And it's going to help them in a lot of areas where they've struggled, namely keeping the run game in check and defending tight ends and coverage. That's been a big problem for the Lions this season. And that's an area where he thrived before he went down with injuries. So, I don't think you're going to see that Pro Bowl caliber player out the gate this year. I know the Lions are saying that's what they expect. I think that's unreasonable, you know, for a guy that's been away that long, despite having instincts that don't really erode because your body's eroding. And then you hope in 2017 where he'll still be here. You know, they're not going to cut him this year. There's not enough financial savings there to let him go. You hope he gets closer back to that Pro Bowl level in 2017.
Justin, you said a moment ago that the Lions might have the worst defense in the NFL, and I want you to expound upon that, because I'm assuming you mean situationally or in given moments, because if you just look overall at points allowed, and I know that's just one giant statistic, and you can get into a lot of metrics and analytics and so on and so forth, but I mean they've given up 206 points, and it's not even close to being the most in the NFL. There's a ton of teams, you know. One, the Browns are over 300, but 280s, 280s, 240s, 260s, blah blah blah. Tons of teams have worse defenses in terms of stopping points from being scored. So, in what way are they the worst, and in what way do you think they can improve that?
Yeah, you know, I think the points allowed is it's not really a reasonable stat if you look deeper into the way the Lions do play. And their offense is a very slow, methodical offense. And I actually looked at it defensively. The time opponents take to snap the ball, you know, on a given play is the slowest in the NFL against the Lions defense. So they're playing fewer plays. There's fewer drives per game. There's just not as much opportunity. But if you look at the percentage of drives that are resulting in touchdowns, their red zone defense, their third down defense, their passer rating against, it's all abysmal. It's all bottom of the, you know, I look at efficiency. I don't look at big picture. I look at how a team gets it done. And this team is incredibly inefficient. There's a really great metric out there, and it's tough to explain. I know it's like war in baseball. It's not everybody loves those kind of statistics, but it's called DVOA. And what it does is it takes every single play in a football game, a third and five, a first and 10, and it takes the result of that play. Let's say a team gains 7 yards on first and 10, and it compares it to the average result of that play across the league throughout the course of the entire year. And so then it judges your efficiency on every single situation of every single play throughout the entire game. and puts a little bit of emphasis on red zone play. And the Lions are the bottom. I mean, they're the bottom of that as well. They're just not an efficient defense. Their stats are buoyed by the fact that they're a slow-paced football team. So they're like the Cleveland Cavaliers when Fratello was coaching them.
What a great analogy. Justin Rogers joining us. I wasn't going to play this for you because I played this for my previous guest from Cleveland who was talking about the NFL. But since you brought this up and that advanced analytic, and that's a fabulous stat, by the way. Where'd you get that anyway?
Which one, the DVOA?
Yeah, DVOA.
That's a football outsiders metric that they use.
I mean,
I think it's very comparative to war.
Is there a place where people can find that? Because, you know, I'm old school. In fact, that's the reason I was going to play this for you, because listening to Bill Belichick, I know where this is going. Yeah, did you hear him talk about this? Just for those who didn't, let me play this real quick. This is Belichick talking about metrics.
You can take those advanced websites and metric them wherever you want. I don't know. I have no idea. I've never looked at one. I wouldn't even care to look at one. I don't even care what they say. As far as the quarterback goes, read the coverage, throw the ball to the open receiver, take the best matchup. I mean, that's what it is in a nutshell. So,
so that's Belichick. And so, you know, I'm more that way than I am the new school way, but I'm not going to just dismiss it out of hand. So you know, with that stat you just gave me, I had not heard before. Because I don't see those listed on the traditional ESPN or CBS or Fox News websites, or excuse me, Fox Sports websites. So where do you find those, and what's your take on Belichick's statement there?
Well, that particular stat comes from footballoutsiders.com.
Okay.
You know, they've been doing it a long time, and you know, that I think football is a very
football
difficult game to get into advanced metrics. It's not baseball. It's not a mathematical game where you can easily break apart the field in segments and create mathematical formulas to judge players. Football is fluid. It relies on a lot of different things, and a lot of times you don't know what you're seeing. But you can judge results, and that's why I like that stat, because you can judge a team converting on a third down and five. You know that is a bad play if you've given up a third down conversion, or you've given up 9 yards on first down. That's a bad play. So, you know, that's why that's one I will lean on, and it compares it to the results across the league. So I find it a little bit more effective. But, you know, I understand where Belichick's coming from, but, you know, he's also a guy that – you know, NFL teams do advanced scouting of teams, and they study tendencies, and they study the smallest minutia of detail. You know, where a guy's foot is placed, at the angle it's placed on the offensive lineman to determine, you know, whether it's going to be a run or a pass, or which way the run or direction of the run is going. They're going to track, you know, how often a guard is pulling and what kind of play that team runs. All that stuff is what advanced metrics is trying to encapsulate. You know, it's all just different ways of trying to find the why things are happening in football. You know, Belichick and traditional coaches just go about it a different way. And is every advanced metric good or sound or accurate? No, but, you know, when you're analyzing a game, it's a combination of everything, I think, that makes the most informed fans, coaches, whatever, is when you take the film, when you take the metrics that maybe they run at the combine, and then you take these advanced metrics, and you put them all together, and that's how I think you formulate your best understanding of any game, not just football.
Justin Rogers, our guest, really good answer, and well explained too, because I think maybe there is some room for both of those things. Sometimes those metrics or statistics or breakdowns or whatever are going to be a lot more valuable than others. Kush, go ahead.
You know, circling some of these things back around in that almost old school way, if you will, based on what we're just talking about, but circling it back to the Lions and some of the things, Justin, you're talking about defensively, I'm almost wondering, because it'll be hard to quantify this with various metrics, but here's an example of something that gives the impression, as you're trying to state, that you could arguably say the Lions are one of the bottom defenses in the NFL. Something that's still there and has been there just since the last time you were on with us, and that was a good couple weeks ago. This team is still atrocious defensively in the second half and especially the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, good luck finding a stat that says the Lions defense is good. I mean, there just isn't one that's out there. Now, they've had weeks where they've done things well, but they don't force turnovers. They're not a particularly good pass rush. You know, the one that really bothers me the most is, I mean, we all understand passer rating. You know, we may not understand the exact formula, but the combination of completion percentage, yards, touchdown to interception ratio, that's what makes up, you know, a good passer rating. Last season, the New Orleans Saints had the worst passer rating against in NFL history. They let opposing quarterbacks have a 116 rating, which is just absurd. That's the type of rating that wins an MVP award. I think Tom Brady's passer rating right now with the great numbers he's putting up is somewhere in that ballpark. Right now, the Lions have a passer rating against of 112. And the thing that bothers me about Terrell Austin's defensive scheme, and I think it's an extension of Caldwell's personality, is they're overly concerned about the big play. And so they're so worried about getting beat over the top that they concede so much underneath. And right now, opposing quarterbacks are completing 74% of their passes against them. Wow. And that's great if you're going to get the, you know, stop a guy and tackle him for a 2-yard gain every time, but they don't. They, you know, they let these teams get 5, 6, 7 yards a pop. Case Keenum is arguably, and I don't even know if it's arguable, it might be clear cut, the worst starting cornerback in the NFL. He completed 19 straight passes, threatened his franchise's record for, or the NFL's record for consecutive completions in a game against the Lions. I mean, that's just how this defense plays. It lets you nickel and dime them all the way down the field, and they're just waiting for you to make a mistake. They're waiting for the unforced error, or maybe even the forced error, if you will. And they don't force the errors. You know, they don't bend and break. They bend, and then snap. They have 7 turnovers this season, which is the second lowest in the NFL to only the team coming into town this week, the Jaguars. And if you're not forcing turnovers and you're not getting stops on third down, you know, that strategy is a failing one.
It's a really, really interesting point. And by the way, that 7 turnovers, one of the stats I mentioned, I read your column earlier today, one of the stats that they really, really need to turn around. We don't have time to list all of those, but that is a very important one. In fact, we're just about out of time. We want to let you run, Justin, but I want to ask you just your thoughts about something non-Lions. Did you cringe last night when you watched Luke Kuechly being carted off with tears in his eyes and on his cheeks? This is one of the tough guys, one of the big hitters, one of the, you know, former Defensive Player of the Year. And the hit didn't look that bad, and we didn't know at that time he was going into the concussion protocol. We know that now. But what were your thoughts when you saw last night Luke Kuechly being taken off the field in tears?
You know, it's just an encapsulation of my thoughts watching football in general. And I love the game. I've always loved the game. It's what I do for a living for a reason. And I was talking to Dan Miller, voice of the Lions, this week, and I said, you know, 10 years ago, you'd see a certain hit and you'd just get excited. You'd jump out of your chair because it was, you know, I don't remember what the segment was on. Oh, Jacked Up on ESPN.
Jacked Up.
Like
yeah,
those
jacked up. Yep.
Monster hits. And you'd be like, yeah, that's what football's about. Now I see him and I go, oh, hope that guy's okay. Like we know so much more about brain injuries and we still know so very little. We've really just hit the tip of the iceberg, I think, but, to know what these guys are dealing with after their career is scary and it's frightening, and I don't have a good answer. I don't know the answer to fixing football to making it safe, but yeah, you watched that hit with Kuechly last night and it was pretty innocuous. I mean, he caught it a little bit under the chin. It didn't look like his head banged against anything when it went back, and you know, the brain's a fickle thing, and like I said, we just don't have a great understanding of it. So it was sad. It was heartbreaking. And, that's with a lot of the injuries you see, you know, you kind of don't feel as bad when it's a knee or an elbow or a leg. I mean, that's just part of a physical game, but
right,
you start affecting a guy's mind. It's really frightening and sad.
Yeah. And by the way, in addition to Jacked Up, which we used to see on ESPN, and I think you and I are a little closer in age than maybe Jim and I are, but you probably remember the Crunch Course videos that they sold, the NFL sold and marketed on videotape back before DVD, et cetera, but the NFL Crunch Course, in which they sold 60 minutes at a time, the most bone-rattling, head-jarring hits ever, you know, going back into the 50s and 60s all the way through the current time. So that was back to the 80s and 90s. So, you know, I'm the same as you. I used to be just so excited by seeing those, oh, what a stick and what a hit. Oh, he rung his bell and blah, blah, blah. And now you're like, man, I hope the guy is all right. And by the way, that good news is, and I talked about this before, Justin, you probably already saw it, Thomas Davis, his teammate, posted a picture of Luke, thumbs up, smiling in the locker room, a selfie with the two of them there. So he wanted everybody to know that he's just fine. So indeed, he is okay. So that's that's certainly a great sign. That was actually just a little bit earlier this afternoon. So
always great, but you know, and then I start worrying about self-preservation. You know, I worry about those guys that don't report the concussions, which there are tons of them.
Yeah.
And maybe this is in the moment he was scared and sad, and now he's trying to put back on the tough guy hat and so he get back on the field, and that concerns me as well.
Well, at least we know, though, because of the protocol, he can't just make the decision himself. He's got to be medically cleared, and they're going to look at everything if they do CTs, CAT scans, and everything else that they do to make sure that he is cleared to go back on the field. So at least you have that going for you, so that a tough guy can't just say, hey, I'm ready, and be sure. Allowed to go back on his own accord. Justin Rogers, always appreciate the chat. It's always very informative, as is your column and your writing. So thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
You got it. Justin Rogers, Detroit News, joining us, talking Lions football right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Always enjoy that when we get a chance to talk to him. More NFL talk is coming up. How about we listen to Mel Kiper Jr.? And, you know, the beautiful thing about listening to Mel Kiper Jr. on the radio as opposed to watching Mel Kiper Jr. on the TV, you don't have to see the hair. So that's coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back in. Jim Kuslin here with you. Time to talk a little bit NFL. We're getting closer and closer to the home stretch, and that means it's time to really kind of look at where we are playoff-wise, and to help us analyze all of that, we welcome in ESPN's Mel Kiper Jr. Hi, Mel. Thanks so much for taking the time. How are you?
I'm good. Great to be with you.
Absolutely fantastic to have you. And thinking about some of the playoff things, I want to start in the NFC, as we're a Lions affiliate out here in Toledo, and they are 5-4, and right now they're coming off the bye week, and they are tied with the Minnesota Vikings for the division. Now, they already beat the Vikings once. They'll get them again coming up for Thanksgiving. Give us where they kind of stand first and foremost in all this, because we're actually starting to use the P word, playoffs, around here now.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams are. A lot of fans are thinking about that at this stage of the season. There are a lot of teams still in the mix. That's just the way it is in the NFL. But I think you have to put that aside. You've been a little up and down. You have this nice run now, but you let some games get away from you. So, and you've pulled some out. That's the nature of what the Lions have been able to do. They're in these games that kind of come down to the wire, and then Stafford's been unbelievable. I mean, the throws he's made this year, you go, wow. He's made so many wow throws, probably more wow throws than any quarterback in the league. He's just got unbelievable talent. He's certainly a franchise quarterback, always has been. And if you, without Calvin Johnson, he's spread it around. He's done a great job, and you're coming off a bye. And I think that's where, again, you got Jacksonville. You're the favorite. You got a great opportunity here. Minnesota, they got to come to you on Thanksgiving. They're a desperate team right now that has a big problem on the offensive line and at other spots on the offensive side of the ball. And New Orleans, I mean, their defense is getting better, but Stafford should have some success there as well. The Bears are reeling right now. Giants are beatable. And then you got the Cowboys on the road, so you figure, unless we spring a major upset there, that could be a loss. But the Cowboys may have things clinched by that time, so who knows what will be happening there. And then you get Green Bay, a team that's certainly a shell of what we thought they would be at the end of the year. So it's a schedule that outside of that Dallas game, and we don't even know what that situation will be like at that time. There's a lot of winnable games for the Lions.
Yeah, and one thing you just mentioned there, Mel, with is Matthew Stafford. And, you know, before the season, even Lions fans around here would tell us, you know, middle of the road, probably quarterback, he's decent. He's not, you know, he's not terrible or anything, but he has played out of his mind to a degree this year. And he is still somebody's franchise quarterback. Quarterback in the Lions, but would you move him up the list of quarterbacks? We all love to do those lists of where the elite and quarterbacks and such are. Do you think, based on what we've seen out of Matthew Stafford this year, that he deserves to be moved up the list a little bit?
I've always thought he belonged up there near the top of the list. I guess I was you know trying to fight that battle. I mean, I love Matthew Stafford coming out. I thought he would be at a high school, a great player in college. He was. Thought he would go on to have a great NFL career, and I think he's had a very good career. Has he had a great career? Well, you're defined in terms of greatness by how you do in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl. And obviously, more goes into it than the quarterback. You've got to have the personnel. You have to have the organization, the head coach, the GM. Everything's got to the coaching staff. Everything's got to be some. You got to be continuity there, and you got to have the right people in the right positions on the field. And they've done things to improve their personnel base. I thought Taylor Decker has improved by leaps and bounds since the season began. You're getting contributions from a couple other young guys as well. Not a ton, but certainly other guys are contributing. But without Calvin Johnson, it's forced him to be, I think, more aware of where other players are and not just, hey, I got to force it to Calvin. I think that's been something we talked about back in August, how it would impact Matthew Stafford positively or negatively. And it's been a great positive for him because it's not that focused. You better get him 8 catches a game. You better go in clutch situations to Calvin. Now it's, hey, I just got to read the defense. I got to make the throw. I got to find the right receiver. And it's not like I have to force it into anybody. So I think for Matthew, he's always had the incredible arm, best arm I've ever seen. I mean, I've watched John Elway throw. I watched Burt Jones back in the day with the Baltimore Colts coming out of LSU, the Rustin Rifle. Obviously there's other quarterbacks that have big-time arm strength, but I don't think anybody matches Matthew Stafford. Nobody can whip the ball around the field like this kid, and he's not a kid anymore. So he's at a stage of his career now where the personnel's right around him, and everything's right in the organization. He should have a chance to lead this team into the playoffs. Remember, a few years ago, it was a questionable call against the Cowboys that really hurt the Lions' chances of moving on that year. So he's elevated this team to playoff status before, and he has a chance to do it again this year.
Talking some NFL here with Mel Kiper Jr. of ESPN. Staying in the NFC, the team right now at the top of the NFC is the 8-1 Dallas Cowboys. And big news on that front, Tony Romo's coming back, but he's coming back in a backup role, which is, of course, leading to all the, oh, where is he going to end up going now, as Dak Prescott has had such an outstanding year. What is the status? Do we expect at some point before next season for Tony Romo to be moved, maybe?
You always say the best laid plans. I mean, you thought it would be Romo, then the injury, and then all of a sudden it's panic time, and then you watch Dak Prescott week after week, beginning in the preseason, and he's just outstanding, and he's playing above and beyond what anybody could have expected. Now, having the great offensive line that he has, and he's got the running game, which they've had before. They had DeMarco Murray ran for a gazillion yards, and Darren McFadden had a big year last year. This line has allowed other running backs other than Ezekiel Elliott to have big-time success. Now, Ezekiel Elliott's got great talent. We knew that coming in. You put any back behind that line, they're going to put up big numbers. Then you have the kids catching the football around him. He's overcome. Des Bryant wasn't even on the field some of those games, and he's out there still doing the job. The defense has played over its head. I mean, that is a defense you did not expect to be playing this well. So everything's kind of come together. There's great chemistry. You don't fool with that. And I've always been kind of amazed. I think they were just waiting for Dak to struggle and say, okay, we're going to go to Romo at some point. Well, that struggle has never occurred, at least for four quarters. You know, we've seen it at various times. Go back to the Eagles game. Then in the fourth quarter, at crunch time, at money time, he's making the throws to win the football game. So as long as that's happening, unless he doesn't have a two or three game stretch where he just hits a wall. Remember, this college season that he played at Mississippi State is not nearly as long as an NFL season. So if he seems like, hey, he's just mentally and physically worn out at some point, and he hits a wall and it goes for two or three games, and then you go to Romo. Yeah, they never know. Injuries occur. Suppose he has an injury. Then you have Romo sitting there instead of Brandon Whedon or Matt Cassel or whoever it may be. You name the quarterback, Kellen Moore, whoever you would have thought could have been the backup. Now you have Tony Romo as the backup to Dak Prescott. So if you do have that unfortunate injury at some point with Dak, you got a guy coming in who's, you know, been big time before. So it's kind of, if you look at it in that way now, and I think you have to look at it in that way now, that he's the backup. He's not going to be the starter unless Dak gets hurt. Or a 2-3-game struggle where he plays a lot different than he has up till this point, maybe that would force you to go to Romo. But up until this stage, I see no indication that Tony Romo is going to be the starting quarterback this year.
And whether it's Romo or Prescott or whatever, Cowboys are 8-1. Then you have Seahawks 6-2-1. Are the Cowboys right now the favorites to take the number one spot in the NFC? And who are the biggest challengers in the NFC?
Well, I looked at that, from last week to this week, and you say there's two teams. It's Dallas and, as you said, Seattle. I mean, Seattle went to New England and got some breaks and made the plays, and they're going to get healthier. That offensive line should keep getting a little bit better. That's been a major problem for them all year, has been the offensive line. Now that gets better, get a little more contributions from a couple of those young receivers, and they stay healthy. I mean, they got a chance to be right there with Dallas or maybe overtake Dallas, and then we could have a rematch of the Super Bowl and a rematch from the game we saw Sunday night between New England and Seattle. Every time these two teams have played, the Super Bowl and the game Sunday night has come down to the final play just about. So, I mean, if you have another third game of that, it would be pretty exciting. So I think you could see a Seattle-New England Super Bowl. Certainly Dallas would be right there. So I would say Dallas-Seattle, it's a little bit more clear-cut in the AFC. I don't see anybody touching New England. England looks like they are so much better than the field. It's amazing. So I think it's New England. If they don't get to the Super Bowl, it would be a shocking upset by somebody. And right now it looks like Dallas and Seattle Baltimore headed for the NFC title game.
We're talking all things NFL with Mel Kiper Jr. of ESPN here on The Ticket. And you just kind of segued. I was going to get to the AFC. So you like the Patriots at top. The other two 7-2 teams right now are out in the West, Kansas City and the Raiders. Is it finally time? Are we going to actually see a Raiders in the playoffs?
You're going to see the Raiders in the playoffs. It's a great story. I mean, Derek Carr, loved him coming out of Fresno State. Thought he should have gone higher than he did. Remember, he went in the second round, and that was the whole Houston not taking David Carr's younger brother, Derek. They took an offensive guard from UCLA instead. Other teams passed on Derek Carr. Remember, Cleveland took Johnny Manziel over Derek Carr. So it's just amazing. You know, I don't know how you justify worrying about a number one pick brother than David Carr, who had a good start to his career in the organization, then surround him with the kind of talent, and then worry about how that's going to impact Derek Carr. It just made no sense to me why you would look at the older brother's situation in the NFL and tie that to his younger brother, Derek. I never understood that, but it pushed him into the second round, and he's been a great quarterback for them. He's one of the top guns in the NFL right now. He's one of the great young quarterbacks in this league, and he's got help. He's got Crabtree, he's got Cooper, he's got Murray, and he's got a couple other backs running the ball effectively. You wish the tight end would be a little bit more productive than it has been on a consistent basis. The line is really good. The defense, hey, they're going to have to score points. That defense in the secondary gives up some plays, but right now Derek Carr, like we talk about Matthew Stafford, and Dak Prescott, franchise quarterbacks, he's certainly one of those.
We're talking with Mel Kiper Jr., all things NFL here on The Ticket. Two quick questions before we let you go. Mentioned we were a Lions affiliate, but being in Toledo, we also have a lot of Browns fans in the area. My two questions are this. One, are the Browns really going to go 0-16? Personally, I think they will, and I say that as somebody who's personally a Browns fan. And two, forget the Browns for a second. What is wrong with the AFC North?
You know, first of all, let's go to the Browns. If you look at the schedule, it's going to take an upset of somebody. I mean, can you go to Buffalo and win? Cincinnati's offensive line is a big issue right now. So you get them at home on December 11th. You look at the Giants, not a great team, but hey, they've got a lot of confidence now after beating the Bengals. Where's the win going to come from? San Diego, maybe, a team that is going to be out of the playoffs by then. They already are right now on the brink of being just about eliminated after they lost this past week to Miami. Disastrous game for Phillip Rivers, uncharacteristically a bad game for Phillip Rivers. But I think you look at the division, I think the Ravens are still trying to find themselves. I'm here in Baltimore, and I've watched it all unfold. You think about the injuries they've had, the lack of continuity on the offensive line, the tight end situation. They had some young tight ends last year that have had the injury issue. Steve Smith, they got to keep him on the field. Perriman's starting to show signs of developing, but Steve Smith, without him on the field, they don't have the weapons. You think about not having a great running back. It's kind of by committee right now. Defensively, they're pretty good. Really good front seven. Back end can be exposed if you give the quarterback time. Pittsburgh's had issues as well. You think about their football team right now. I watched them a few weeks ago when Ben came back from the injury. Antonio Brown's a tremendous player. Tight end situation. It's not Heath Miller anymore. It's Jesse James, and he had some drops during the course of the season. So I think the offense, you can rely on one guy. You have Martavis Bryant not be there has hurt them. Their defense is just not good. They don't get after the quarterback. They don't stop the run. They got trouble in the back end. Artie Burns has been up and down as a rookie. So what's that going to get you? It's going to get you having to win some shootouts. And then you get to the Bengals. The offensive line has been the biggest issue they've had all year. And that's been a problematic area. And then letting Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu go. So your offensive line's not as good as it was. And you don't have two key guys to work in with A.J. Green and Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu. Tyler Boyd's been okay, but he had the big drop Monday night. When if he catches that ball and it's a touchdown, not a field goal, the Bengals probably go on to win that football game.
It's going to be an interesting down the stretch, no doubt about it. Thank you so much for the time and the insight, Mel, and hopefully we can catch up with you maybe down the line at some point. Thanks
Anytime
for the time.
Anytime you need something, just give me a call, pal.
That is Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN, talking all things NFL with us.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.